This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. Tis crunchy yet soft. Tis filling yet has a hole. Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's. Huzzah! A toast to breakfast.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right, thanks, Musa. How are you?
Good, thanks. I'm actually wearing a Christmas sweater.
And if you is it a Christmas sweater?
It is indeed. Yep, yep.
It's very colourful.
Telltale
it is. I don't like that. Sorry, no offense. No, the jumper's lovely. Sorry. The jumper's lovely. The fact that you're wearing it on November 19th. /November 20th, if you listen to this on Monday.
You don't like
it. Recording this Sunday night. Well, there's just... shops have got Christmas music in, Christmas decorations are up. I'm like...
it's too early, isn't it? I agree. Couldn't help myself. It's also sky blue, which is unfortunate, given the topic of this podcast.
Yeah, well, we're all fortunate.
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose so.
Moose is biased. You're a biased podcaster.
I'm biased. Yes, I am.
Anyway, yeah, what, 6 weeks out till Christmas or something? And yeah, I don't know, it's all a bit...
ugh. Indeed, indeed.
Check me going bar humbug.
Yes, I know.
Bar humbug.
We got him. Humbug, we got him.
Oh, dear. We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, wherever you are in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Quick bit of admin. No Write Your Sounds Tuesday. No Stadio Thursday. So Stadio today, obviously Counter Press will be up. And then we won't be doing Thursday and Write Your Sounds will be back on Friday. So,
yeah.
And then back to normal next week. So just one... less Righty's House and one less Stadio this week.
Indeed.
Thanks to everyone who reached out about the Lotta episode. It was really kind. I thought she was great.
Really awesome.
So today we're going to do the Manchester Derby in the WSL.
We are.
Which took place at Old Trafford. First Derby at Old Trafford in the WSL. And we'll talk about Everton's points deduction, which happened on Friday. Well, the news broke on Friday. We were hoping to kind of talk a little bit about Liverpool this week, but maybe we can save it for after the Liverpool-Man City game because that's the first weekend back from the men's international break. So it kind of seems like we can just nudge it till next week.
I think we can.
And maybe a little bit on those, Fisher. But all right, should we get into it?
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Manchester United 1, Manchester City 3 at Old Trafford. There were 43,615 in attendance, which was a new record for a WSL fixture at Old Trafford. I thought it was a really good game to watch. A strange game in terms of the flow.
Yes. So it's funny because City had really quite a few shots on goal before United took the lead, but looked more dangerous after United scored. The quality of chance creation was actually superior, I felt, after United scored. So when United were defending quite deep, they were breaking beautifully behind that high line. You know, City's high line tempting United are going behind. And I thought some of their play on the counter was fabulous. Mm. I thought Galton was really good, really disciplined at left back, to the point where Chloe Kelly actually had to go looking for easier targets across the other flank. I think she found the right flank more accommodating, her left flank more accommodating. But generally speaking, in terms of the flow of the game, it had almost, let's say, four distinct stages.
Yeah.
Opening section.
Up to 10, 11 minutes. Like, it was just all City.
Then yeah. United counter and take the lead. City dominant. And then that dominance, well, the dominance was at five stages. City dominant until they go down to 10 players. And they kind of had to see it out. Mm. They kind of had to see it out. And actually, some of United's play they put together in the last few minutes was pretty decent, but actually pretty resilient in the end from City. So it was just a great match just to watch in terms of, you know, hashtag narrative. Mm. But also interesting in terms of, I wouldn't say so much the tactical matchup, but the individual performances. Look at this, the City front line is extremely attacking. Mm. Aguilar through the middle, Pembe killing the flanks, and then Shaw up top. An extremely forward-thinking, like, forward line, actually.
If Rod and Hasegawa, you're kind of like two sitting midfielders,
right?
Then that means you're really going to push. And I think maybe Gareth Taylor had a bit of pressure, pressure, and, you know, hadn't had, City haven't been on the best run of form. They obviously lost to Brighton last week. They beat Liverpool the week before, 4-3, but lost to Arsenal before that. So they've kind of been stop-start a little bit. Mm. You could tell that there was definitely an awareness from City that they couldn't let United benefit off the occasion right at the beginning.
Yes.
They had to really make a bit of a run from the jump.
Yes.
And they came out looking just wildly superior,
yeah.
I think, for that opening 10 minutes. United couldn't really land a blow on them at all.
No.
And then obviously United managed to kind of get a bit of breathing room by doing that counter-attack when Mallard does that incredible little
Mallard
turn.
Mallard was really impressive, I thought, throughout.
And breaks, lays it off to Elatoun, who kind of then misses the opportunity to shoot and kind of plays
it. Doesn't attack
yeah,
it.
Plays, yeah, and plays a bit of a weird pass across the box.
Yeah.
And then City regained dominance again until the handball on Alex Greenwood, who's just come back. Mm. Gave United a penalty and Katie Zellin put it away. It was strange because after United had weathered that opening 10 minutes, they started to get into the game a little bit more. They broke a couple of times and just couldn't really find that pass, that final pass, or create that opportunity. But Jay-Z started to really take control of the game. Mallard was really good. Not take control, but started to like impose her will on the game.
Found great spaces actually, and really transition was excellent.
Mallard the same. And it started to look like, all right, City could really be in trouble here. Mm. There's obviously that second goal that gets disallowed where the ball goes out of play and it's flagged. It's a really weird passage of play this. So Jay-Z's onside on the through ball. Play continues. I think she probably holds onto it a little bit too long.
Yeah, what the hell was she waiting for? What the hell?
She should have laid it. It was Nikita Paris in the middle, right? She should have laid it off to Paris way earlier. Mm. Alex Greenwood gets a foot on it by the time that she does lay it off and it goes out of play, tries to keep the ball in play, puts it in the net. The assistant flags what looks like for offside, but then a goal kick is given. It wasn't offside because it was off Alex Greenwood and it actually should have been a corner if it had gone out of play.
Yes, that's right.
And there's no VAR, so there's a bit of a confusing reason
The real sin is the early pass. That pass had gone in. That's 2-0, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that was just, I think, before, was it like 2 or 3 minutes later, City were 2-1 up.
Absolutely, and the equaliser beautifully worked. Kelly squaring it to Rod. That was such a good goal.
Jill Rod has an ability in games like this just to all of a sudden decide that she's going to start playing. Like, not that she doesn't try. It's not an effort thing, but I think there are a few players that I've seen that have the ability just to like crank the dial a little bit and create like such destruction in such a short space of time, and then just go back to like fitting into the system. Do you know what I mean?
We saw it in the Champions League with Wolfsburg. We saw it you know, those late stages, you saw her and Wasmuth just going on a tear. They would just raise the level. And I think there's a calmness there. Mm. And almost the, even though she enters the box from deep for that goal, because it's interesting, the way that City play, because they've got Hasegawa and Rod there, one of the reasons you need the line ultra high is because the moment the ball breaks behind them, you need Greenwood just up on them. And that was actually the strength. It's what City did actually, to their credit, really well. It's why the high line, I think, is brave, but it's really progressive tactically. It's exciting to watch. Mm. But Rod is starting quite far back. And what Kelly does for the first goal, the equaliser for City, She does this thing where she comes into kind of the inside left channel and she looks around, drops deep, and then looks and then spins off, comes round the corner and just navigates the thing of one-on-one with Blundell, navigates the one-on-one, and then it's just turns on the afterburner and gone. And the whole time that Kelly's dropping deep, Rod is just kind of walking slash jogging into the box.
Mm.
And the finish, when it comes, it's so funny. It's so clean and she's in so much space that it looks like just terrible marking, but it's not. It's like someone who's, she sniffed it. She's seen there's an opportunity coming. So she did that beautifully. And then basically like virtually from kickoff, or from kickoff basically, City regained possession. Shaw has an effort, doesn't work for her. She does a great layoff to Hemp and Hemp just rips it.
Top such corner. A good goal.
Gorgeous goal from Hemp. Can I say this as well from Hemp's performance? At a certain point, she's filling it left back.
Mm.
The work that she did defensively in this game was just, it's a Trojan effort. See, outstanding from her.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it ended at halftime. But I think it was interesting that I think the theme from the first half actually was both sides' struggles to maybe play out the back efficiently.
Yes.
Like distribution from goalkeepers, but like both goalkeepers who I didn't think were, I mean, we'll talk about Mary Earps for the third goal in a little bit, but I think both goalkeepers were struggling to really, they weren't nervous by any means. It wasn't anything like that, but there was just a lack of rhythm around both sides playing out of the back. United managed to do it a couple of times where Katie Zellum would drop in and then kind of go, but she got herself into trouble a couple of times as well.
But that's also because she was the only out.
Yeah.
This is the problem. She was the only out. So then you had Earps, and the problem was that Earps, some of the long passing wasn't coming off.
Mm.
So then that meant, okay, well, go for the short, come in. But then there was a target on Zellum's back. And actually, I'm amazed she got out as easily as she did in the first half, because the first, when they were really under pressure, City under putting United under pressure, Zellum had a really tough job bringing it about herself, because Galton had a relatively muted role. He was going to sit deep, keep it boring, Blundell occupied because Kelly was switching with Hemp to an extent at a certain point. So there was only one rote out. And I think maybe that was also what undid Earps to an extent in the second half.
Well, yeah, because it was just much of the same from the first. And I think it was more stuff like, even like Alana Kennedy, Alex Greenwood, out to Wahabi, passes that weren't onto the foot so that the defender can kind of control and go forward. There was a lot, it was really small things.
Yes.
But it just stopped both sides like really efficiently just being able to play out the back. I actually think the best period from playing out the back came from United after City went down to 10 players. They started to really move the ball quite efficiently out of that because there was a little bit more space there, granted. But the rhythm of the passes was really snappy. It was like,
which is weird because City briefly improved as well when they went down to 10.
Yeah.
It was also strange.
It almost like it focused everyone's minds a little bit.
Both things are true. Yeah.
And also I just think that I think the fact that United, through everything in between when they did get out and up to that final ball, when they broke in the first half, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought Elatoun was kind of disappointing, hasn't looked super sharp.
Her radar was off today, I would say. It was a small thing with Elatoun, but just even that pass she got in the first half, the angle of the run, the ball's curving, and you know that's going to be the pass you'll get because they had that. United very much felt, because Galton was left back, didn't have that playmaking coming from that side in the first half. So you knew it was going to be right to left. So in the knowledge of that, you're coming from steep and you're attacking the ball in space. So when the ball curves into a path, you might say it was, you know, because at one point the ball curves into a path in the first half. She arrives on it a fraction late, and it might be unfair to isolate that, but it felt like symptomatic of her performance where she was just a step too narrow and a step just behind it. And Elatoun at her best just is lethal on that. Like there's no catching her. So I think you're right. And I think, but that's also maybe a thing about the play that she has, the style she's got. I'm not convinced that as a sort of figurehead, arrowhead and of attack, that's her strongest suit when you're countering like that. And that's not a criticism of her. I just always felt that she's someone who actually has a more withdrawn role where she's more dangerous, where she operates behind a kind of Shaw type character. And when you're playing on the counter, these margins are small, but they're the ones that matter, you know?
Yeah.
Paris has some useful things. I've got to say, Paris's movement, actually out of possession, was quite impressive at points. I just felt that United had, you know, they had their chances, you know? It really should have been 2-0. And I'm only saying that in sympathy for United players, because they'll look and go, God, if 2-0, what could we have done with that? Because actually, at that point, their counters were spectacular. They were really finding room really well. They were doing it with ease, actually.
So, not long after the restart, the third goes in. And again, it's kind of a bit of a, not a mix up at the back, but just a lack of fluidity in the passing at the back allows Bunny Shaw to really close down Mary Earps. And I think Mary Earps made probably a poor decision trying to go long there.
She closed on her a lot quicker than she thought. I don't think she thought she would have. Yeah. Yeah.
I think if she just aims to go wide, she probably gets away with that. But Bunny Shaw closes down, blocks the shot, it goes in. And that's 3-1 City. And City kind of took their foot off the pedal a little bit at that point and just started to manage the game. And it wasn't until Leah Alexandri got sent off for a second yellow when she just like...
I mean, that was, yeah.
It was a clip down Garcia. Tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a really, really silly tackle. There was just no need for it at all.
There was a covering defender. Like Garcia wasn't going to like, you know, get one back. There was a lot of room before. There was no need for that foul, basically.
No, there was no need for it whatsoever. And then it really energized United in a sense, but they didn't really seem to they took over in terms of possession, I think. But a lot of it was very much kind of in not stale areas, but they struggled to really cause City a lot of damage with the possession that they had, because Gareth Taylor made a few changes, switched to a back three with wing backs.
I mean, what do they really have? They had a good effort from Garcia from distance that was creeping in.
Yep.
Keaton did well to turn it away. They then had an effort from Zellum that looked like it was going in the top corner, but actually just lacked a bit of power. And that was kind of it. Even with 11 minutes of added time, Garcia had a shot attempt of 10 yards out, but it was closed down really well. City just basically blocked the gaps really, really well, closed the spaces. And actually, this is Gareth Taylor. I have to say credit for him in terms of how he... No, he's got. We know he's got a deep squad, but he really got a tune out of them. He really got a tune out of them, and I think the strength of his coaching, the strength of what City did, really just making them chase the game. United, we know that they're going to be a possession-based team. City, we knew that United were expecting less possession, but I think they were really smart the way they drew United out, and for the most part, they kind of got what they wanted. They kind of got the game they wanted. At most points here, I think.
Yeah, I think they managed it really well after the second half.
The only real danger came was when Lauren Hemp, you saw Lauren Hemp as a forward because she's coming up from the back and she just takes one player too many and you're like, yeah, that's a forward. Because like a defensive midfielder lays it off. But that was the only real pressure. The real pressure for City, I think, was the bulk of it was self-imposed, I think, actually.
The XG, I think, was kind of even, but obviously with that was a United penalty. So the non-penalty XG was massively weighted in City's favour. And I think that's probably something that for Mark Skinner afterwards will be something that is really annoying. That they just couldn't... I think they were maybe got a little bit too... Not impatient, but there was a lot of clock. There was a lot of time left, especially with 11 minutes added on as well. There was a lot of time to work City. And I think that a few parts in the final third were just a bit rushed from United. Tried to maybe get a goal too quickly after the sending off.
Yeah.
And I think it just, again, it stopped them creating any real like
momentum or
You rhythm. Know, like when teams go down to 10 and sometimes you're just camped in your own box and you cannot get out and it's just wave after wave after wave of attack. It never really felt like United did that, I don't think.
Right. Yeah.
So I think in the end, I think City deserves the 3-1 win, to be honest.
They just seem to
have like another gear than United, which is a shame because I think that United have been impressive this season and, you know, there's signs of real progress there. And I think for a showpiece fixture at home, you know, at Old Trafford, in the derby, I think that maybe overall they would probably feel pretty disappointed with how much of a gap there seemed to be at certain points of the game for a City side that have struggled as well. And for a manager in Gareth Taylor who's been under pressure.
Yes. So we can definitely put this in the credit column. This is, if you're looking at what City should look like, how they should play both on the front foot and adversity, this is absolutely it. More of the same, I think. More of the same.
So City leapfrog Manchester United and go third, which is probably good news for the top two, actually, especially Arsenal, because Arsenal continued their winning run. First clean sheet of the season. They beat Brighton 3-0 away. Really impressive win. Stina Blackstenius opened the scoring after a wild miss kick and then just and then proceeded to just turn around and pop it in the top corner. And then they left it late after that because Brighton are a good side. You know, we talked about them beating City. Mm. Caitlin Ford with a great goal, driving forward, smashed it in from outside the box. And then Frina Leonardson Marnham got the clincher in stoppage time. Katie McCabe went off and the armband went to...
There she is.
Lotta Ubemoy. great to see Lotta wearing the armband.
Wonderful.
But yeah, good win for Arsenal.
Really good win for Chelsea. Really good win for Chelsea. With the way Liverpool have been moving, I thought this was a moment, actually. This was a real kind of... They've given people trouble in games. You know, they took 3 goals off City, obviously beating Arsenal first game of the season. This was almost about Chelsea re-establishing terms, and they just got a masterpiece from Lauren James.
Mm.
An absolute masterpiece. You know, Liverpool getting back into it. I was disappointed, I think, actually, that Liverpool didn't give us more,
yeah.
I must say. I think defensively, I think this was the genius of Lauren James, is that with a team that's defensively as good as Liverpool, in terms of systems, the way that you really beat them is you have to just beat them the isolation one-on-one. Mm. And Lauren James on her day is as destructive a dribbler as there is in world football. And absolutely just, when she orchestrates, and it's not just the dribbling, it's also the crossing. The cross she pulled, I think, for the second goal for Liverpool was just, she does that with either foot. This is the thing. Mm. Like Lauren James is a deep lying passer. My one criticism of her, I think at the World Cup, my one criticism was when she was getting stopped in the dribbles and transition, she wasn't relying on her long passing more because her long passing is brilliant. Mm. And there was a point last season where it happened where people were stopping her with the dribbling. So she was like, okay, I can hurt you with different tools. And I think in this game, we saw the full range of the talent. Now she's not playing against, I mean, it's ifs and buts. So she's not playing against Liverpool, then vastly different outcome because there's very few players in world football that can undo you individually like that, actually. Mm. And I'm not even sure how badly Liverpool played, weirdly enough. I just think that Lauren James went supernova, basically.
Just a quick shout for Rachel Daly's stoppage time winner for Villa against West Ham after Lisa Evans has scored a really, really good equaliser as well to get West Ham back in it. That's got Villa out of trouble because they were in a lot of trouble before the weekend. They were bottom, right, I think, before the weekend. A great goal for Rachel Daly. But yeah, go check Counterpressed for the rest of the women's football chat. Let's talk about Özfischer. Özfischer leaving Union, which is a real shame, but it seemed to be a very much a mutual thing. He was
the parting
kind of like,
statement, yeah, parting yeah. by mutual consent, is one of the most beautiful letters to a departing coach I think I've seen in a long time. It's basically just a gorgeous, gorgeous thing. No, let me just very quickly, so just to give some excerpts from it. Özfischer took over the position of head coach of the men's professional team of Union on July the 1st, 2018. Together with his longtime assistant coach, Marcus Hoffman, the coach and support team, the team, the entire club, the Swiss football coach wrote a unique sporting success story. I mean, he'll go down in Union history as the most successful coach to date. Repeatedly received awards for his work in Berlin, voted Trainer of the Year in summer 2003 by various football specialist magazines. I mean, just when he was sacked, Union president Dirk Zingler said, "I only recently made it clear that Özfischer is an excellent coach, and I continue to be absolutely convinced of that." I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. You know, the last few weeks have taken a lot of energy. We tried a lot. The team put in a lot, but it didn't pay off in results. Nevertheless, it feels right when a change happens now. Sometimes a different face, a different way of addressing a team helps the trigger development. And the really striking thing about this departure is that Zingler and Fischer were talking constantly about what they could do to turn the team around. And they lost 13 of the first 14 games. Great report in The Athletic talks about how the loss to Braga after being 2-0 up devastated them in the Champions League. And also we can add to that the point against Real Madrid that they lost. You know, they were drawing until very late, until Madrid got the late winner. You know, it's ironic that the Champions League is one of the things that ended up contributing to breaking Union or breaking Fischer's tenure. But the thing the Athletic makes clear is there's a lot of talk outside the club about how like it got to their heads, they got too far, but actually it wasn't. The priority was always the league. I think what actually happened this year was a mixture of being extended in the Champions League and psychologically devastating because you're working so hard for little outcome, because Union were already overextended, I think, in terms of the player performance. The Champions League, unfortunately, is just so ruthless in terms of margins. And also the fact that like a lot of the other teams have stepped up their game. You know, Union were brilliant for the last 3 years, and they also took advantage of teams not having, frankly, like their act together. And now that teams have got their act together, it's harder. It's just a perfect storm. And I just want to say, as you, I'm sure you do as well, Urs Fischer, just the bad memories will fade. Hopefully Union can still stay up, but regardless whether they do or not, I mean, the man wrote them into history.
This is a classic case of great coach done otherworldly things at a football club that had like no fucking right to be in the Champions League in the current climate of like wealth in the game. And the way that they built year on year, literally built when the club nearly went bankrupt because of the hands of the fans helping out to rebuild the stadium. The way that they won that qualifier, the relegation playoff, sorry, came up to the Bundesliga, stayed up, went into the Conference League, went into the Europa League, went into the Champions League. It's
unbelievable.
Like, and not that it you should really talk about cross city rivals at a similar time, but at a time when all eyes were on Hertha to like turbocharge because they had the Windhorst investment, did the whole big city club stuff. You had these like completely contrasting trajectories using two completely different methods. Urs Fischer was central to all of it, completely central, because the way that he constantly evolved that side, you know, a few players came in and out, remember? There were a couple of like, you know, like losing Iwone, signing and then losing Max Kruse.
My goodness, that's like, you know.
Like, because when Kruse signed, everyone was just like, holy shit, Max Kruse's at Union. This is unbelievable.
And also perfect. Culturally perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. Like, ride it around on a scooter in Berlin kind of thing. I think the joy that Urs Fischer has brought to the club, you know, finishing bottom of that Champions League group is not grounds. That is not why they've parted ways.
No, it's not.
It's the form in the Bundesliga that's now getting to a point when actually something's not quite right. And it's that thing that Ian always talks about, you know, when he always references Icarus, right? And it's kind of a little bit like that. We've seen it with clubs before who have achieved great success kind of unexpectedly, and then they suffer a really sharp drop off kind of almost as unexpectedly. And I think that the one fear I had for Union this season, the signings were really fun to a degree, you know, like Robin Gosens coming in was just like one of the most Stadio signings of all time going to Union. The Bonucci one was really interesting because I think it's a sign of what a club in the Champions League can do, how they can attract players. But also, that's quite dangerous when you're just like, you're attracting players just because you've got in the Champions League when they may not have even had any inkling of coming to you the season before. That's a strange kind of balance to master, I think. And I just think it got really difficult to figure out what was working, what wasn't working. And there gets a point where you have players like Bonucci and Gosens in there. And I'm not pointing fingers at them by any means, but it becomes really, they're players who have been there and done that. And it starts, I think that's when probably the drop off accelerates. As opposed to when you're doing it with a group who are kind of experiencing it all first time together. Do you know what I mean?
You almost need that extreme hunger. Yeah, you almost need like to go and find the next like version of, you know, like Sandro Tonali when he was like scrapping away at the bottom of the league with Brescia. You need to go and get those players and just keep buying hungry players who are desperate to be put on.
Yeah.
Who are desperate for their chance. Because that's the thing. You look at like all of those players that Union had, if you look part of the ascent, they all had a point to prove. Can't score in a big division. Can't be a regular starter. You're past it. Like they all had a kind of, none of them were winding down. They all had a kind of an urgency. And there's also like, and people talk about identity being a cliche, but there's an Union ethos.
Mm.
And that ethos is what got them the extra mileage in those games. But again, like to the point, the Bundesliga, the players, the teams in Bundesliga, they're better coached this season.
Yeah.
A lot of those clubs have sorted their act. They got their act together.
Yeah. And the clubs had a scare are like, you know, like Stuttgart are flying and,
right.
You know, Leverkusen record start, I think equaling Bayern's record start to a Bundesliga season.
Yeah.
It's a tough league, man.
One of the German football pundits on Blue Sky, there's a Blue Sky reference, was saying how they felt like the Augsburg game could have been the turnaround, and it's a shame Fischer didn't get that one.
Mm.
I mean, we'll never know now, of course, and you don't know, but he did have a tough run of games as well. Like, it wasn't, the Werder one, look at the 2-0 loss to Werder's, and I thought, yeah, this is over.
Especially how they started the season. They absolutely flew out those first two games, and they've just never looked the same since. It was wild. But Marco Grote has taken over as interim, and Marie-Louise Etter is making Bundesliga history by becoming the first woman assistant. She's stepping up from the under-19s, which is really good to see. Yeah.
Big deal here. Yeah, very best of luck to him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Interested to see what happens next for us. I think he'll get a good job. I think he'll get a really good job.
Mm.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if he stays in the Bundesliga or if he goes elsewhere.
I hope if he has a kind of proper return at some point, they just absolutely spoil that man. I'm not sure how it all works out. I mean, he might just disappear and not be seen for a while, but
yeah,
we'll see. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break and then we're going to talk Everton.
Let's do it.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
All right, man, so the Premier League have dished out a record 10 points deduction for Everton for financial irregularities or breaking. What was the actual thing they got done on?
Well, so breaking their financial fair play spend. That's the...
Yeah.
That's went wrong.
There are many pieces that have come out that you can go and read that have the proper breakdown of everything. But the summary is it's the heaviest punishment ever handed out to a Premier League team. It also opens up to potential legal action from Leeds, Leicester, Burnley and Southampton, who were obviously relegated in recent seasons.
Suing for loss of earnings.
Yeah.
So the lawsuit there is a total of 300 million, each of them saying they've lost 100 million because they went down and Everton didn't, and Everton overspent and they didn't. That figure was assessed, as one of the experts, by as unrealistic, but still, the fact that they're bold enough to make claims like that show the severity of the problem Everton's facing. Mm. And that could lead to a further 9-point deduction. Everton potentially could lose 19 points as a result of financial irregularities. And what that says, of course, is that there are other clubs in the Premier League that should be extremely worried too.
Mm.
Because Everton, by no means the worst of a reckless bunch when it comes to spending.
No, but I think that... Let's talk about this first and then maybe we'll move on to like the wider what this kind of like could potentially lead to. But I think that one of the major things that they got, I think a lot of it was to do with like the Usmanov Mashiri stuff. And obviously when Russia invaded Ukraine, Usmanov was sanctioned. It meant that he had to withdraw from the club. There was a massive drop off in earnings from stuff like sponsorships involving Usmanov. I think naming rights for the stadium, that deal was dropped. But I think there were also one of the problems that I think Everton got done for was the fact that interest-free loans, I think, from Mashiri were not, I think they were included as like equity. So it was like creative accounting
Loans is equity.
I know. Do you know what I mean? Now Everton have come out and said that they're surprised at the severity of it, and you know they were surprised that a sporting sanction was the punishment for something that you know is just a kind of it's like arguing over accountancy stuff. You know what football clubs are like.
I mean, but how else do you like make the punishment count?
Yeah,
this is the thing, isn't it? Because otherwise, I mean, you're going to throw money at the problem. And also like some really unrealistic projections in terms of their business plan. Was it Marcel Brands, then director of football, made a business plan on the basis that Everton would finish in the top eight. And the advisors were like, actually, no, maybe like 13th is more realistic. And they were right. Listen to your advisors, people. So yeah. And that's really frustrating and sad for Everton fans because Sean Dyche was really doing some decent work with them in the last few weeks.
Well, I actually think, should we talk about what next for them, right? Because there's been some really good writing and some really good explainer podcasts elsewhere that, you know, I think people should listen to if they haven't already. I'm assuming that if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you already have. I think this is an interesting position for Everton because even if the points deduction stays, I mean, they might appeal and get it reduced as well. We saw that happen with Juventus last season. All of a sudden, they were 15 points, and then it wasn't 15 points, and then it was again, and then it wasn't. And
yeah.
Jose was losing his mind. It was all a bit confusing to see Juve all of a sudden just pop up in like third, and then they were like 12th. And they was like, well, would someone make their mind up of what's, you know? But I still think Everton are good enough to stay up.
Yeah, and, I think so. And that's the best manager for the job. He's even more so now, actually.
But who goes to Goodison Park first after this decision?
Better not be Arsenal.
It's Manchester United.
Oh my God.
Manchester United at Goodison Park next weekend. And there
Siege
is nothing,
mentality
there is
nothing
that is going to galvanise this football club more than that because fans are being, well, the fans and the football team itself are paying the price for stuff that hasn't just been handled properly at board level, right? Of a potentially outgoing administration, let's say. I mean, do you know what's really, really bad though is that on the very last episode of Stadio before this happened, I was like, Everton fans were like, why are you, what? You know, they didn't believe me because when I said they're going to be all right. And then literally the next day.
Oh no, that friend of ours at the studio, like, whenever we go in, he's so happy because Everton are doing well, Lewis. And we're like, oh no, man. Like, I felt genuinely awful because, you know, that win over Palace, for example, stuff like that, just moving, trending the right direction. Calvert-Lewin is scoring. It's just work.
Like not a lot. Yeah, it's a difficult place to go, but I still think that Sean Dyche has got enough going on here.
I think so.
For them to stay up, because I think that this actually is a really interesting Premier League season in the sense that, like last year, there was no real middle table. There was just a load of like okay teams that were like 10th down, and then there were a load of really good teams above them. Whereas this season, I think there is a very clear drop off in terms of Premier League quality the further down you go. Like, I think, for example, there are 1, 2, 3, I'd say 6 sides that I would put to go down before Everton went down.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
And I think that that's the key thing for them this season, in that over the course of the season, because it's happened so early, you know, you've still got 26 games left, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is enough time for them to still get out of trouble. For example, if on the next match day, Sheffield United play Bournemouth, Luton host Palace. So if Everton beat Manchester United, there is a very real possibility they could already get out of the relegation zone.
There's so much to play for. That's the thing. You're right. Early in the season, gives them time to reconfigure. Also, they've already got some really good team chemistry there. So just like stick to the plan, heads down, hope that extra band doesn't come in and ride your luck. But there's still, I think, a chance to make them out of it.
Now, one of the things that obviously everyone had to say about this online was, well, what about the City stuff? What about the Chelsea stuff? Like, they've got away with it. How can they keep getting away with it? They haven't got away with it.
No.
You're seeing all the stuff that's coming out about Abramovich, money being paid places while he was at Chelsea. That is starting to really unravel. Maybe we'll do another episode on that later down the line when we have the bigger picture. But I think there's a couple of things at play here. So Everton got found guilty of breaching like a specific regulation. Manchester City have been alleged to have breached a few bits of regulation.
Yeah.
multiple times. And if you look at how long it took the Everton thing to be solved, bear in mind that Manchester City were only charged, what, March? I think it was. It was this year. That is going to take fucking ages to come to a conclusion. The fact that the Premier League have been so severe on Everton, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be that severe on Manchester City. You know, Manchester City aren't going to have like a 100-point deduction.
It does mean we can expect a rigorous process. I think it does mean that regardless of the outcome.
I think that's the... For the future, I think the thing that will be making Chelsea fans nervous and Manchester City fans nervous is like, that is a severe punishment for one... Well, it's the heaviest points deduction in Premier League history for this kind of thing. However, it kind of looks like there's a hell of a lot of smoke on different things, different cases, we know this. So I think that the fact that the punishment was so severe would be the worry for Manchester City fans and Chelsea fans.
I agree, absolutely.
Because I'm not assuming guilt, but I'm saying that like the fact that the Premier League are kind of looking like they're really going to clamp down on this stuff, I think, to be honest, way too late, is something that could be scary. But then also, I think that in a weird way, you know, like when Juve went down that year,
right,
and everyone just stayed, they won the league, they came back up again. I think actually for Manchester City fans, I think they'd be fine with it. Honestly, I think they'd be like, even if they got relegated, do you know what we could do here? We might actually see a Stadio, not a Stadio what if, but a more of a kind of like a talk pundit what if play out in real time. Could Pep actually hack it in the fourth tier of like British football? Could he do it in the fifth tier, Musa? Could he do it in the National League?
I would laugh to see the first, because you know, what would happen, I think, in the championship would be the first couple of games before City like got their rhythm. You would just have teams launching it at their centre-backs, like, and just pure rugby up and under style. And then like, I think they would get, and they get a couple of bloody noses the first 3-4 games. And then they would just like assume, but the first 3-4 games, I think the championship would be very interesting.
Mm.
But that's all hypothetical. If City went down or not, we don't know. But as it is, difficult for Everton because the new owner coming in, the new ownership, 777 Partners, has already been concerned about them. So I don't know. It's hard to sort of see much good news for Everton beyond the pitch at the moment. The good news is there is hope on the field. There are some really good performances there on the field. So I hope they just keep performing to that extent.
Like I said, just because they've deducted Everton 10 points, it doesn't mean that it's going to stay 10 points. And I don't think I think it's really hard to get a gauge on what might be the sanction on Chelsea and or Manchester City.
Even now for Everton, it's just a very deflating thing to receive in the middle of the international break when you should be relaxed and going, look, we're actually like at a nice place in the table. It just plunges you back into that uncertainty, you know? It's a bit like, you know, like flat hunting in Berlin. You know, people eventually find a place, but the worst thing is the not knowing. It's the gap in between, isn't it? The agony of, am I going to actually land somewhere comfortable? And that anxiety drawn out over the course of a season is something that Everton fans are hoping to avoid, I think, at least on the field. You know, whatever happened at board level, at least we get the play right. But this is the sad thing about it. It's taken out of the player's control to a certain extent.
Yeah. I mean, I do think this is... I mean, we have expressed in the past concern at how Everton was being run.
Yes.
Some of the signings they made, they went on that wild run of signings where they're signing people for loads of money.
Mm.
They kept signing number 10s, do you remember? I'm like, why are you doing this? Obviously, they got hit pretty hard by the COVID season and they're building a new stadium. So there's stuff there that has been, you know, they could argue were factors. But I think it's the more... I mean, we've seen how fans have protested against the running of that football club for a long time. And there was, you could see the spending in real time for some of the fees that they were paying for people.
Right.
And I think that was always going to be hard to maintain to some level of the degree. Now,
and
I think
let's look at the mismanagement was just goodness.
That's the word I'm talking about, mismanagement. Yeah. And I think that it actually leads into a wider conversation, I think, but it feels like it's a wider conversation that we've had already a million times.
Right.
Just about how football clubs are run in England. Because, you know, the independent regulator and all this kind of stuff happening. And the Premier League is by far and away the richest league in the world, and it's just all a bit icky, and it would be really great if there was some kind of wrestling back in terms of club structure. But you're just so far gone. People have bought those football clubs for billions of pounds.
Right.
And I'm not entirely sure how you wrestle it back to be a kind of, to be anything other than just this wildly out of control free market.
Right.
And with that, you're going to get people who are going to do this to football clubs, and they don't really pay the price because they've kind of sold it, or they're trying to sell it and bounce. Right. So it's the fans, it's the people at the club who do their job and just work with what they're, you know, is available to them. Also, I'd just say that I think it's been interesting to see the difference in response to Everton's plight and other cases, because it shows you that how successful those teams are play a massive factor in the kind of public opinion on it.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Like no one really like even mentioned much about Man City when they were just signing silly kind of like championship manager legends in the first like few seasons.
Mm.
It was only when they kind of really started to get serious that everyone started to be, whoa, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
And I think we talk about this quite a lot, but I think that's one of the differences between like here and say like, yeah, well, I know we talk about the Bundesliga a lot, but it's fans like put pressure like before anything even happens.
A lot in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think
sometimes on behalf of other clubs in other countries.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is misinterpreted as jealousy, but it's not. It's genuinely.
And I think that there's been care. We've talked about this for I think since we started Stadio about there's going to be a point when something in the Premier League like
gives.
Yeah. Because as we've seen with any like markets, if you know what I mean, like something always gives at some point.
Super League, yeah. We know there's a line now. We know there's a line in football for when things go too far for the fan to stomach. Because we saw it with the Super League, and there'll be a different manifestation of that with the Premier League. Different manifestation when it becomes too much.
I mean, I don't know what that would be or how effective it will be, but I think that I'm not entirely sure. I don't understand how many kind of like cases you need for stuff like that in the Premier League, like in terms of like past administration or like financial irregularities. You know, clubs that have charging a club with a load of breaches of regulation and then giving the very person who had to announce those charges, then giving them the trophy and the award and the medals at the end of the season. It's just all a bit like, what are we doing? And I know I've done that classic thing now, just being like, well, what about City and Chelsea? But not about what about City and Chelsea. But I think the three cases, even though they're all very different, there will obviously be a link there because they've happened at similar times to different clubs with involving different things at different times. So it's going to be interesting to see how consistent, or actually if the punishments aren't consistent or they're quite different, why they are so. You know what I mean? Because I do think that, you know, the 115 charges thing that I think has now been reduced a bit, but still over 100 charges. I think the fact that, I think that number is much like 10 points is very, very, very headline grabby.
Mm.
And I think that when, the fact that it's kind of repeated breaches of like one thing doesn't sound as sexy, I suppose, for the
clickbait. Well, look, nothing is, listen, financial accounting is one of the unsexiest topics you'll ever talk about on a podcast. But I do think at the same time, there will be a conversation about whether this sets a precedent and what other clubs can expect in the wake of this.
Mm.
And overall, to be honest, regardless of the outcome, it's just really sad to see a great club struggling like this, because it should be so much better. Everton should be, they should be looking at where Spurs are and thinking, new stadium, manager who gets the club, everyone putting together, you know, that could be us, but we're playing. They might well, it's not impossible, but
like they might deal with the points deduction. They might stay up. They might get the new owners in who aren't particularly great anyway.
Well, get the right owners, I think. I'm not sure these lot are the right owners.
No.
Get the right owners.
Ugh. Football, man.
Football.
It gives, it takes away.
It takes away, it takes away, it takes away. No. It gives quite a lot.
One thing it does give us are plenty of moments, which is topical because of the tune that we're playing out on.
Great segue.
But, should we leave it there? Should we do it? That's good. All right, everyone. We hope you're all staying safe and well, like we mentioned at the top. Don't forget, no Writer's House on Tuesday, no Stadio on Thursday. Writer's House is back on Friday. Full schedule next week. And you've got Counter Press this week as well, so don't forget to check Flow and the Gang. Don't forget to check the Stadio Outro's playlist on Spotify. I mean, we've been both loving the Andre 3000 album, right?
It unlocked writer's block.
Wow, no way.
I think that would be
one of the best compliments he'd take from that.
It's a spectacular. You know what I love about it? It's so brave. Just before we head off, because I just want to quickly say about this album. Oh my goodness. New Blue Sun. I actually wrote a poem about it. It sounds really pretentious, but I am actually a poet, sorry. It's pretentious, yes, but this is what poets do. And I listened to the album. I gave it its first listen through on the flight. Mm. So I was basically like, you know, I literally listened to Andre 3000 at 30,000 feet. And what I thought as I listened to this album was, I thought, it's such a perfect listening experience because, you know, you're above the cloud, no distraction, no Wi-Fi, you can't surf the phone, you're just looking out the window, beautiful kind of like, you know, mid-afternoon sun. The thing about this album, I remember thinking, it's so perfect for the moment we're in, because how many times, because the album is just like, it's just basically him playing flute incredibly with beautiful arrangements, lush synths, all this. It's a gorgeous record. Now, the thing about it is, I will say, is that there's been so many things in the news that I've had no words for. Mm. And I felt this album perfectly expresses, without a single word in it, so many of the emotions I feel about the world at this point.
Yeah.
It was like the perfect accompaniment. So when I landed in Berlin, as I landed, I was like, oh, there's a project I'm working on at the moment. And this album has helped give myself the permission to write it. Because the reason I've had writer's block for the last few months without realizing on this project is because I was not giving myself permission to write it. And that album unlocked it. Wow. I swear, no word of a lie, that album unlocked it.
I mean, it's a great album. I love it, man.
It's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
It's so good. It reminds me of a lot of like early beatless Detroit techno.
Wow.
Some of the stuff on there reminds me a lot of that era. Like,
the arrangements are just unbelievable.
It's just sick. I wish we could have played out on it, but I don't think we could have cleared it in time. But but what I was going to say was, because even though we can't play out on Andre, I have been listening to another very, very lovely album, which is by Habitat Ensemble, and a track called Moments, which is on a very kind of similar vibe to that. So we're going to play out on this.
Love that.
So don't forget to check the Stadio Outro's playlist on Spotify. And anything else you would like to add, Musa Okwonga?
Thank you, Andre 3000. I love you, 3000.
Yeah, and big up Habitat Ensemble for this beauty.
Absolutely.
Have a lovely week, everyone. Enjoy Writer's House, and we'll be back with you next week.
See you then.